You all came, highly recommended. You know the rules. No real names, no backstories, no cell phones.
So whose kid is she?
A very wealthy man who's about to be $50 million poorer.
I'm here to make sure you're safe.
What's your name? Mine's Abigail.
You can call me Joey.
Do you have any kids?
I have a little boy.
See you in 24 hours.
Do you know what a pinky promise is? If you behave and do as we say, I pinky promise you, it'll all be over soon.
Joey?
Yeah?
I'm sorry about what's gonna happen to you.
What the fuck?
We gotta get out of here.
I think she knows something.
Guys? We kidnapped a fucking vampire. A ballerina vampire. Okay, how do we kill a vampire? What are we talking about, like an Anne Rice or a True Blood? You know, Twilight? Stake through the heart. Daylight is a big one.
All right, let's go kill us a fucking vampire. Ready?
What can I say? I like playing with my food.
Whoa. He's fucking flying!
Hello, everybody, and welcome to the latest episode of Fresh Cuts. This is Mike. Joining me, as always, it's Mr. Venom. What's up, Venom?
Greetings and salutations, underage bloodsuckers. Yeah, I'm doing all right, Mike. How the hell are you doing?
Pretty good. Looking forward to seeing if our streak of watches continues for 2024. I don't know. It's going to be hard to tell, because I feel like this is a movie that could go either way with people. Yeah. So
big time.
Yeah. Next up with us, it's Don and Ellie. What's up, Don?
Yeah, what's going on? I'm always happy to be here.
All right. We are tackling the movie Abigail this week, theatrical release. I think we had already mentioned it on the previous episode. No-brainer since it was in the theater. So let's see. After a group of criminals kidnapped the ballerina daughter of a powerful underworld figure, they retreat to an isolated mansion, unaware that they're locked inside with no normal little girl. All right, people might recognize... Well, I think they'll recognize plenty of people from the cast, but Melissa Barrera might stand out just because of everything that's gone on with her in the last, 8 to 12 months. So, yeah. And the girl, I forgot her name, let me look, the Lisa Frankenstein chick. Catherine Newton.
Oh, right.
It is.
Yep.
Mm-hmm. Yep. And Kevin Durant, who plays Peter, he was in, what was that FX show from Del Toro producing that vampire show?
The Strain.
I remember him from that. Angus Cloud, known from Euphoria on HBO. And of course, what's his name? Lambert, played by Esposito.
Dan Stevens. Oh, no, Lambert is Giancarlo.
Yeah, yeah. Gustavo from Breaking Bad that everyone's should be aware of, I guess. And Dan Stevens, too. He's...
I love Dan Stevens, man. That was... seeing him in this role, playing the polar opposite of his role from Godzilla X Kong, was actually pretty refreshing. So I did like that.
Yeah, it's a pretty ensemble cast, so lots of familiar faces. And, okay, so rated R, an hour and 49 minutes. Okay, so we will start with general thoughts as usual. So, Venom, what did you think of Abigail?
I thought this was a fairly fun little movie. I accidentally saw this trailer. You guys know I don't watch trailers, but I accidentally saw this one before another movie that I was watching in the theater, so unfortunately I couldn't avoid it. But the trailer, I mean, the trailer gives away, obviously, that Abigail is a vampire, and she's been kidnapped, and, you know, shit hits the fan, basically. So I was wondering where the story was going to go. Are there still going to be some mystery to it, some reveals? And as it turns out, yeah, there were. Do I like the reveals that we get? Maybe not particularly. Obviously, I can't really get into the specifics of it right now, but during our walkthrough, we'll definitely dive deep into that one. But overall, I mean, I thought the pacing was okay. Obviously, you have to get through the first 10 or so minutes before any actual vampire action happens. But once Abigail reveals herself to her kidnappers, it's a pretty fun movie after that. Could it have been more fun? Absolutely. I mean, a vampire movie like this definitely could have been a little bit gorier, could have had a little bit more creative kills, things like that. But overall, I still thought it was a fairly fun movie with some good performances. I mean, you know, we only get Giancarlo for like two scenes ultimately, you know, one scene for his introduction and one scene for his outro. So it's odd that he got such high billing, especially in the trailer, because it seems like he plays a pretty vital role in the trailer. But, you know, he's only there for a couple of scenes. So if you're looking for a lot of Giancarlo, then, yeah, you're not getting that in this one. What you are going to get a lot of is Melissa Barrera, Dan Stevens, Catherine Newton, like Mike said. Yeah, I mean, and for the most part, this is a pretty fun little movie. Like I said, all of the characters in the movie, there's really only one character that I just hated that I couldn't fucking stand, and that was, like, the gangbanger douchebag, played by Angus Cloud. His name is Dean in the movie. Just, it's like he purposely tried to be the most annoying person in the group, and he definitely succeeded. Otherwise, everyone else in the group I was very okay with. William Callett as Rickles, you know, the former Marine. Peter, the muscle. Dan Stevens as kind of like the leader of this group. Just, another great performance from Dan. And Melissa Barrera, I mean, I'm not gonna sit here and necessarily praise her performance. I mean, it's good, it's serviceable, definitely. But you know, it's not like exceptional by any stretch. It's not like Sydney Sweeney in Immaculate or anything like that. But I mean, she does the job well, which is fine. Like I said, I had issues with the third act. Once we get the reveals. And we got, like, multiple reveals in a row, which, you know, some were okay. And like I said, the last one just really left me reeling. If you guys remember that film, The Invitation, from last year, the vampire film, it kind of has similarities to that one. And if you remember, I hated that fucking movie, too. Now, Abigail, I don't hate. I just hate the ending. That's all. Otherwise, I'm very okay with the action. I wish there was more, yes. There was one cool little scene of a, like, underground area, an underground pool in the house that something I didn't expect. But the other thing, the major issue that I have with this movie is how predictable it is. I mean, really, within 10 to 15 minutes of the start of the film, I knew where it was going. And I think most viewers are going to know where it's going. Maybe not necessarily the big reveals at the end, but like why this group is here, why they're babysitting Abigail, blah, blah, blah. Like all of that I figured out in the first 10 minutes. And you guys know I don't try to figure out my movies. I try to go on the journey that the director has laid out for me. But sometimes it's just so obvious. It's slapping you in the face, you know? Very much like The Stylist from a couple of years ago. But this one, again, aside from its very predictable, maybe not finale, but at least the predictability of the situation that these folks are in, it kind of left me waiting to get to the end. Like, okay, let's get to it. I know what's coming. I know how it's going to end, so let's get to it. I know there's going to be, you know, obviously once Abigail's father shows up, and I fully expected him to show up at some point at the end of the film, I just really was hoping that he wasn't who they're implying that he is. And I actually did some research on this film. This film actually had a different title when it first went into production. I am not going to reveal that title right now because it gives away the end of the movie. So obviously, very good choice in changing the title of the movie. But for those of you who are very savvy with your Universal horror, think 1936. I will leave it at that until we get to the walkthrough in the spoiler section. But overall, I thought it was a fun movie. It's not a be-all, end-all. Like, it's not nearly as fun as, like, a Ready or Not or something like that, you know? It's fairly fun, fairly enjoyable, some decent characters. You know, even with the group of villains, I mean, there's some very likable characters there. I actually really liked Peter. I thought Peter was, you know, and I know he's the kind of big goofball that a lot of people make fun of, but something about him just really, really worked for me. I've already praised Dan Stevens. Like I said, to see Dan Stevens just 2 weeks ago as the plucky comic relief in Godzilla Kong, but then to see him here as just the complete opposite character, a ruthless gang leader who's an ex-detective, you know, he's showing his range, I will say. I'm definitely noticing Dan Stevens' acting chops lately, so good on him. I hope we get to see him a little bit more. But ultimately, like I said, I thought everybody in the film did well other than the one character that I couldn't stand, but we'll get to that in a little bit. So as far as a recommendation, I don't know if I give this a high recommend. It's a solid film. It really is. It's objectively well done. It's just going to be a matter of how the story beats work for you. Maybe not so cool and scratching and cringeworthy, if you will. So I'm just going to leave it at that and say solid movie. I give it a mild recommend. I don't know that it's vital viewing in the theater. Like, I'm not going to sit here and say that it's worth your $20. I might not go that far on it. But if you're a fan of this cast, I mean, if you like all these folks, you like a good, fun vampire flick with, you know, a little bit of a surprise twist ending, then I would say go ahead and check it out. I mean, the cinematography is okay. The house that they're in is gorgeous. It's a really nice mansion. But again, I don't know that it's vital to see it in theaters. So if you want to wait for streaming, I think that's a good option too. But overall, I had a good time with it. I don't know that it's anything that I'll return to. It didn't like wow me by any stretch of the imagination. It was just a good middle of the road, fun little vampire flick. So I'll leave it at that for now.
Okay, let's kick it over to Don. What did you think of Abigail?
Yeah, I'm kind of right there with Venom, a lot of respects. Kind of where we were last week with First Film, and maybe like towards the bottom end of the, you know, good films that we've been getting lately, but, you know, still solid enough that it's, you know, not really the, you know, dregs of stuff that we've had so far this year. I do want to say, to Venom's point about a lot of the predictability, whoever marketing was the director for this film, whether that's for, you know, anybody at Universal or one of the, you know, other studios that did this, sir, you need to find a new profession, because I think a lot of this is down to how royally fucked over this movie with the trailer for this. I know for a fact that a lot of what came in here, I was right last week when I said the reveal of it being a vampire was supposed to be important to the characters, not for the audience, and I was 100% right. I think this would have played a lot better if we would have just known that there was something wrong with the girl that they're holding, and the vampire reveal is, you know, the point of what transpires in the film. I think that would have played a lot better. I think that would have made, the action flow a little bit more. You have all these mysterious deaths rocking the group, and they can't figure out what's going on, and then they trace it all back to the girl, and then, you know, surprise, oh, she's the vampire that's been draining everyone, and then that kind of just, you know, plays out from there. I think that would have made the film flow a little bit better. It would have taken a lot of the surprise out. Objectively, I agree. There's nothing wrong with it, how it's made. It looks great. The mansion looks fantastic. I hope one day to finally be out of this crippling debt that I'm in, so I can have a place like that to myself. I think that would be a, I think that'd be a fun place to live. But yeah, I don't think I'm gonna be out of that kind of financial strain anytime soon. So yeah, it's kind of out the window. But you know, for the future, maybe. Anyway, yeah, the action scenes are fine. You know, some of the, you know, second act is kind of, you know, it gets a little wild and fun, which I really like. Just, yeah, whoever marketed this thing and told everybody this is a vampire, you know, this really, really would have served a lot better if, it's the Death Punch would have been a lot better if we would have actually not known from the very beginning that this was, you know, even if you didn't say anything about her being a creature, if you would have played this up as like some kind of like haunted house movie where the things happen and we think it's the house rather than Abby, and then all of a sudden it's revealed that, you know, the twist is that she's a vampire, I think that would have played to the film's strengths a lot better. And then, yeah, the third act, wow. I mean, you know, not saying too much. I don't want to, you know, again, I don't want to say a lot for spoilers, but that really went into directions I don't really like. Trying to choose my words carefully here. I think the decision is okay. It you know, the direction it goes. I just don't like the way that it leads up to it. And I think that's going to mean more when we finally get to the walkthrough. I think the idea could have worked, but I don't think how we get there is enjoyable. And I don't know if I should say much more than that, but yeah, the third act is kind of where this film struggles. It makes it way too long. I mean, this thing probably should have clocked in like maybe 10 minutes shorter, you know, maybe get it closer to an hour and a half. I mean, you said this was like 140, right? 145 in that area?
50.
149, yeah. Almost 2 hours.
Oh, yeah, okay. So, yeah. Well, I mean, I left right when the credits started rolling because I didn't – I nobody said anything about a post-credit, so I just – I left. So it felt about 140, 145. So, yeah, that makes a little bit of sense. But, yeah, you get this closer to, you know, 135, 140. I probably would have liked this a little bit more. And then, yeah, not knowing – her being a vampire probably would have served this movie a great deal of good, because that would have been a fantastic gut punch. Or not just even, you know, like a gut punch, but just it would have made the you know, second act feel just like a really over the top and crazy. But mm-hmm. Yeah, I like it. I, you know, I'm not going to say it's going to be end of the year material. Wait for streaming is probably the best bet, I would say. Probably the end of next month. You know, if you've got nothing else to do, this is a great time waster. I don't really know much else to say to that. Although I will say kudos on the Universal reference, Venom. That was the film I was thinking of the most when I first walked out of this. The particular Universal film is one of the first things I thought of. The other one is, I don't know if, I've seen one or two people post about it, and I'm actually kind of glad they did, because it's a hidden gem, and it's the Vid or Livid or whatever. I don't remember, but it's the one from the guys from who did Inside. It's the follow-up to that one, and it kind of follows very similar grounds. Another one that I really enjoyed. So, yeah, the Universal film is one of the first ones that I thought of, so kudos to that one. But, yeah, like I said earlier, my best bet is wait for streaming. So not a priority, but I did, from this year, you can do a hell of a lot worse. And, I mean, there's still a lot to like about it. So, yeah, fun stuff. Don't necessarily agree with some of the choices it made. But, you know, again, you can do a lot worse. So, again, at the expense of saying anything else, I will leave it at that.
Let me jump in here real quick, jump back in here real quick. I want to say that I 100% agree with Don that this movie was mismarketed. They should have marketed this as a kidnapping, and then somebody is taking the kidnappers out, and even put Valdez in the trailer. Ooh. Like, they utilized this character.
Yeah.
They utilized this character of Valdez in the movie, And that's what should have been in the trailer. They should have made it seem like someone is coming to save Abigail, who, you know, is close to her and potentially might have like some supernatural abilities or something. And then when we watch the movie and we get the reveal that there is, you know, or, well, I probably shouldn't say that, but that Abigail is, you know, a vampire, yeah, it would have hit so much harder. Like Don said, it would have been almost like a gut punch. But yeah, definitely they missed an opportunity there. So I just wanted to jump in there before Mike gets in here.
Yeah, I completely agree. That was that, you know, whoever marketed this movie, sir, you need a new profession.
Yep.
All right. Yeah, so for me, I agree with most of what's already been said. To me, it's kind of like a big, dumb movie, but how do those types of movies redeem themselves? By being fun. And I think for the most part, this is a fun movie. My two main criticisms are, I think it has one to two too many twists thrown. Not only does it have a couple unnecessary twists, but it's like all thrown at us within like, what, 5 minutes of screen time at a certain point. And then two, and this might just be a personal thing, the ending of this movie does not stick at all for me. I was kind of underwhelmed by how the movie actually ended. Mm-hmm. But other than that, like, I enjoyed the cast. I thought they all played kind of like their stereotypical criminal profile characters well. You kind of had a mix of, like, amateurs with, like, a couple more professionals. So I dug, like, kind of the interactions between everyone. I mean, there's definitely comedic elements to it. IMDb just has it listed as horror thriller, but I definitely think some of the writing and dialogue in there got chuckles out of me, especially before the shit really hits the fan, when it's just them kind of like assessing the situation, figuring out what's going on, why they're there, and all that. And I think when going back to like the twists, I think the problem is like once they start revealing like all these twists, if you think about it a little, then it's like, well, did you even need this elaborate setup if that was your intentions the whole time? It almost makes it null and void, the entire setup of the movie. And it didn't seem necessary. I felt like the movie was fine on its own merit, which is, hey, there's this vampire kid running around killing all of us. That was strong. That's like a strong enough setup. I never mind a twist in a movie, don't get me wrong, but I just think this one, I don't know, it's like they got twist happy at a certain point, and we're like, okay, let's throw this wrench into it. Oh, but really, it's this. Oh, look, who turned on this? So felt it was a little unnecessary. Got a little convoluted in that third act. But otherwise, I did enjoy it. As far as, like, do you have to see it in the theater? Nah. I mean, I would always say just go see it because, I mean, it is its own, I guess you would call it an original horror movie. You know, it's not attached to any other franchise or anything, so go see it. It seems like most feedback on it or most response is more positive than not so far. I mean, I think people are thinking it's a fun movie. Is it, like, going to be on a top 10 list at the end of the year? Probably not, but I still think it's plenty worth seeing. And like I said, I think this movie's really elevated by the cast. I liked seeing these characters interact. I love, like, the frustrations between everyone. Once certain things start unfolding in the story, people react to it different ways. You always have, like, the cut and run people versus the no, we need to stick it out versus the no, I'm desperate because of my situation where I need the money that we've been promised, so I'm staying no matter what. And the way everyone kind of reacts to the situation, I thought it was well done. I think the cast is the strength of this movie. We get a couple decent kills, but like Venom said, it could have been a little more creative in how the kills happen. When we did get, like, blood and stuff, I thought it was done well. I just wish there would have been more of it. Or at least when we got, like, the one-on-one kills, they got a little more creative with them. But I've seen worse this year as far as kills and lack of gore or blood goes. So we do get – I would say to its credit, we get a lot of blood. I just think that they could have done more creative because mansion that they're in, there's a lot – like as they're just walking around exploring different rooms with all like the kind of antiques and I guess – old school collector items. There's a lot to work with in this mansion. I almost thought the reason they're showing us all this stuff is because it was going to be more involved in how people were getting killed and stuff, but not so much. But at the end of the day, I did enjoy it. I had a mostly positive experience with it. The criticisms that I do have weren't enough to make me dislike it. So I'm still giving it a mild recommend. I would just say, know what you're getting into. It's kind of a fun, dumb movie that's elevated by the cast. And now I guess I'll leave my general thoughts at that, because otherwise I'd just be repeating what you guys already said.
I'm right there with Mike, though. The strength of this movie is the gang, specifically. The seven members of the gang. I thought, their interactions, their the way that they talk to each other, the way that they handle situations, the way that Frank, Dan Stevens kind of takes charge of everything. That was all enjoyable. Once we actually got to the kills, the kills are fun because, here's this little girl going around biting people's necks and, breaking limbs and things like that. So that's always fun. But like Mike and Don both said, the movie needed a little more. If you're gonna inject as much comedy into this as they kind of did, I wouldn't go so far as to call this a horror comedy. There is intentional comedy in here. Absolutely. Definitely Peter, Peter's interactions and Sammy, too, as well, the Catherine Newton character, are enjoyable and funny characters, like I said. So there is, some laughs to be had, but ultimately the movie is lacking in just a lot of things. It should have had, more kills, more gore, should have been marketed better. It should have been shorter, definitely. There's no reason for an almost two-hour movie with this story. This story literally could have been a short in a horror anthology. This could have been like a 20 to 25 minute story, and it would have been just as satisfying as sitting for an hour and 50 minutes in the theater to watch this. In fact, it might have been more satisfying. So, yeah, they definitely took a 25 minute concept and dragged it into 2 hours. But and the way that they dragged it into 2 hours was just adding reveal after reveal after reveal. And it's like, oh, my God, after a while, it just got tedious. So, yeah, I think we're all pretty much in agreement. The movie's worth seeing. It is fun. I think we all had some level of fun watching it, but it definitely just could have been a little more is all. All right, guys, so is there anything else that we want to talk about before we get into the walkthrough, which I can't imagine is going to be that long?
I'm good.
All right, then, let's get into it. Our movie opens with Abigail in an auditorium, a completely empty auditorium, and she's playing the music from Swan Lake, and she starts dancing on stage, blah, blah, blah. You've seen it in the trailer. Now, while we're watching her dance in this empty auditorium, we see various gang members preparing for the kidnapping in the film. And it does happen pretty quick. It's like the second scene in the film. So basically, we're just seeing all these different people doing their parts of the job. You've got Sammy, who's the hacker, disabling alarms, opening gates, things like that. You've got Frank, who's kind of like the leader of the gang, basically giving everybody orders, telling them to shut up left and right, blah, blah, blah. You've got Joey, who's played by Melissa Barrera, who's a very smart girl. Very intelligent, but unfortunately, she has an addiction. I'm not sure. I don't know if they even mentioned it if it was like meth or something like that, but it was an addiction that she got while she was in the military, which, we'll talk about a little bit more later on. We see Rickles. Now, these names that I'm spouting to you right now are not the real character names. These are fake names that were given to these characters by Giancarlo, Lambert, who, basically just didn't want anybody to know anybody's name, didn't want them to talk about their past, didn't want any information exchanged. That's kind of what we're dealing with throughout the opening scene of the film. So, after Abigail's done dancing, she leaves the hall. There is a limousine, a really nice, like a Rolls Royce limousine, waiting for her outside the hall. She gets into it and leaves. And we see the kidnappers in various teams. I think there's two separate teams. one team that's already at the house, and then one team that's following the Rolls Royce that Abigail is in. Once she gets home, they spring the plan, they kidnap her, they drug her. Nothing too out of the ordinary happens during the kidnapping. Just as they're finishing the kidnapping, the owner of the house, you know, perceivably Abigail's father, shows up, and the kidnappers have to kind of make a hasty getaway. But they do eventually get away. And then they all drive over to this mansion, this mysterious mansion, which is not anywhere near where Abigail lives. They purposely went outside of the city to deal with this situation. So we get to the mansion, and this is where we meet Lambert, who, of course, is played by Giancarlo Esposito. Have I been saying Stanton? I got baseball on the brain. I think I might have said Giancarlo Stanton a couple of times earlier. Sorry, folks. Giancarlo Esposito. He's the guy who basically gave these folks this mission, basically said, you know, we need to get this girl. Her father is a rich, you know, tech billionaire, and, you know, he's going to be $50 million poorer at the end of this evening. Now, that right there was my first hint that there was something wrong here. Because think about it. There are seven members in this gang. Each member of the gang was told they were going to be receiving $7 million each. Seven times seven is 49. That means that Lambert, the guy who put this whole thing together, this whole $50 million plan, is only going to be getting $1 million of the money. Yeah, that instantly, that had red lights going off in my head already. This is where I started to kind of piece together what is actually happening here. So after, you know, Lambert gives them their instructions that they have to watch Abigail for 24 hours. And after 24 hours, they should have their money, and then they'll be able to let Abigail go. And then they can all go their separate ways, $7 million richer. Now, obviously, like, no one knows who Abigail is, and no one knows who her father is other than Lambert. And everybody's really, like, mad about it. They want to know, who is this girl, you know? Because if she's, like, the daughter of, a drug kingpin type guy, you know, I don't want to get on somebody's hit list because I kidnapped their daughter, you know? So while they're there, Lambert assigns Joey the responsibility of actually being the one who talks to Abigail, the one who actually goes into the room. Because they don't want Abigail to actually lay eyes on anybody's face in the gang because she might be able to identify him later. Joey, Melissa Barrera, wears a mask, and she's the one who interacts with Abigail. And right before Lambert leaves, he collects everybody's cell phones. He basically says, cell phones are very easy to be tracked, and I want to make sure that none of you have been tracked, so I'm taking all of your cell phones. The only one who really had a problem with it was Dean, the kind of gangbanger douchebag who I actually forgot to introduce earlier. Dean is actually like the wheelman. He's the wheelman. He's basically the driver. Now, the problem is that he's a white boy who is an absolute gangbanger. You know, he wears the loose clothes, the backwards baseball cap. He talks in incredibly broken Ebonic English, you know. I mean, the kid thinks he's African-American, basically. And he's just such a douchebag throughout. Like, every scene that he's in, he's got to be a douchebag to a different person in the movie. So, yeah, if the director's intention was to make him the most hateable character, then you have succeeded, my friend, because I fucking hated that guy. So, at this point, Giancarlo or Lambert leaves with all the cell phones, and Joey goes up to see if Abigail is okay, because they did drug her with, you know, a syringe during the kidnapping. By this point, Abigail is awake. She's crying. She's asking what's going on. I don't understand what's happening. And Joey basically lets her know, well, you know, we just want some money from your dad. Once we get that money, we're going to let you go, and, you know, I promise that I won't let anything happen to you. And Abigail's like, are you sure? I don't believe you. I think someone's going to hurt me. And then they do, like, a little pinky promise where Joey, Melissa Barrera, has a pinky promise with her, letting her know, I will absolutely guarantee that no one is going to hurt you tonight. They go ahead. And also Joey takes off Abigail's blindfold against the wishes of the rest of the gang. Because like I said, they don't want Abigail to lay eyes on anybody's face. By the way, Joey is wearing a mask during this scene, so it's not like Abigail's looking at her. Finally, the leader of the gang, Frank, played by Dan Stevens, just gets completely frustrated with with the whole situation of not knowing what's going on, blah, blah, blah. So he literally goes up to Abigail's room, the room that they're keeping her in, opens the door, and then realizes that Abigail is not wearing a blindfold. So he closes the door instantly, and he gets all pissed off. He ends up rushing into the room, putting a gun right up to Abigail's head and saying, "Did you see my face? Did you see my face? What color are my eyes?" And Abigail just, you know, continues to deny that she saw him or that she could identify him or anything. So finally, he puts the gun up to her head and says, "Who is your father? Just tell me who your father is. I want to know who it is." And finally, she says, "My father is Christoph Lazar." And instantly, you see Frank's, like, you could almost see the blood in his face drain as he hears that name. And he says, "Really? You're Christoph Lazar's daughter?" And she's like, "Yes." He runs out of the room and rejoins the rest of the gang who's down in the parlor getting drunk. And basically starts packing up his shit and says, "I'm out of here. I'm leaving right now." And everybody's like, "What the fuck are you talking about? Why are you leaving? You're giving up $7 million? And then he tells the rest of the gang, Abigail is Christoph Lazar's daughter. And this is where we start learning more about Christoph Lazar. Dean, the douchebag, basically says, "Man, that guy ain't real. He's like a legend or something. He's like Kaiser Soze, you know? He doesn't actually exist." And then everybody else in the gang is like, "Oh, motherfucker, he actually exists." And they start talking about stories about Christoph Lazar. And one of the stories, the major story that they talk about, is how a police detective infiltrated, you know, undercover, infiltrated one of Lazar's gangs and actually had three of Lazar's lieutenants turn against them, and they were going to turn state's evidence. So what ended up happening is they were kept in the penthouse of a hotel surrounded by cops. Like, literally, I think they said they had, like, 10 cops posted on the floor with two cops posted right outside the bedroom door where the three men were being kept. Basically, the next morning, which was the day of the trial, the police opened the bedroom door to get the three men to take them to court, and what they found was just body parts everywhere. They said the room – we don't actually get to see it, but the way it's described to us is the room was covered with blood. There were body parts everywhere. All three of them were torn limb from limb. Blah, 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 blah. And then they're like, and the only way in and out of that room was either the front door, which had two armed police officers there, or the window of the bedroom, which was 23 stories high. It was 23 stories up. So they, like I said, they were in the penthouse of this hotel. So, yeah, so, you know, they're telling stories like this of Christoph Lazar. And, you know, obviously he already sounds like he's an immortal of some kind, but I digress. They decide, okay, we got to get the – I want to get out of here. After they tell the Lazar stories, there's a weird thing. There's a quick scene where Joey is challenged to say something about everyone else because, like, the people are trying to figure out what they know about each other. They've never met each other. They've never worked with each other. They know nothing about each other, but they're just going by, like, mannerisms and speech patterns and, you know, how you carry yourself, blah, blah, blah. And Joey is challenged by Frank to start with a $100 bill and says, "I'll give you this $100 bill if you can say anything correct about my past." And Joey looks at him and says, "You used to be a police officer." And she snags the $100 right out of his hand. But then she expands. She keeps going. She's like, "But you weren't just a regular beat officer. Based on the way that you carry yourself, based on the way that you hold your weapon, I'm going to say you were a detective, probably vice or homicide." And obviously, you know, Frank is defeated, so he walks away quietly. Everybody in the room is fairly impressed with Joey's deduction abilities. So then Peter is the next one, and Peter's like, "Here, I give you $100. You tell me about me." By the way, Peter is a hardcore Canuck. He's got a crazy French-Canadian accent. So I forgot to mention that. Part of the reason I like him. I dig that accent on a big, muscular guy like Peter. I just think it's interesting. So then she looks at Peter and says, well, you're a big guy, and you're obviously not ultra-intelligent, so let me guess. You were bullied all through your childhood, and then you decided to work out like crazy, and once you became big and muscular, you turned the tables and became the bully. And Peter's like, damn, and hands her the $100 bill. And let's see, what's next? Next is Sammy. Sammy only hands her a 20 and says, what can I get for this? And she's like, really? Only 20? That's awful cheap for a girl that comes from money. And Sammy's like, oh, shit. And, yeah, Joey basically says, you come from money, which means you don't need the money. You're only doing this for the thrills. But you're a thrill criminal. And Sammy's like, oh, shit, she got me, and hands her the $20, blah, blah, blah. Rickles, the only black guy in the gang, same thing, hands Joey $100 and says, tell me what you know. And she goes, and instantly she just goes, Semper Fi, implying that he is a former Marine, and she is indeed correct. Now, the last one to go is Dean, the douchebag, the gangbanger douchebag. He gives her $100, and Joey just looks at him and goes, ah, you're not a professional. And everybody in the room is like, ah, no, what, duh, he's not a professional. Look at him. And she's like, no, I mean, like, he doesn't know what the fuck he's doing at all. Like, he knows how to drive, but he's not professional. He doesn't know how to carry himself. He doesn't. And like I said, this is all stuff that any of us could have deduced, because Dean is such an open book. He wears his idiot heart on his sleeve, you know, so. So literally she collects about, what, $520 within 20 minutes of being here. So that was interesting. So like I said, after Frank realizes who Abigail's father is, they decide, is it worth staying or is it worth just taking off? Because we can just leave Abigail here tied up in the bedroom. She'll be safe and someone will find her in the morning when they come over here and we'll be long gone. Obviously, we're saying goodbye to the money as well, because there's no way we're going to get paid. Finally, they say, you know what? I think it's Peter. No, not Peter. Frank. Frank is the one who says, I'm out of here. I don't care. He goes to the front door of the mansion, and it turns out that a gate has been lowered in front of the door that they used to come in, and now none of them can get out. And then they start checking all the other entrances and windows, and everything has been boarded up. Like, this mansion has a security system, like almost like a fortress. Like, everything shuts down when this thing is turned on. So they start to realize that, shit, we're trapped here. There's not really much we can do. So finally, they go to they figure that Abigail knows where she is. Like, at this point, no one knows where they are. They don't know what this house is. Lambert didn't tell them whose house it was. But they start to think that maybe she knows how to get out of here. So what ends up happening is they go up to her bedroom with their guns, and they basically threaten Abigail and say, how do we get out of here? How do we get out of here? And Abigail basically, this is where we get the first reveal, which obviously we get in the trailer, where Abigail covers her face and then just exposes her face, and she's got those fucked up sharp teeth and the crazy clear eyes. And she, I think the first person she attacks is Frank. And they all go running out of the room. They lock the door. She doesn't actually kill Frank at this point. She just kind of attacks them real quick. They end up getting out of the bedroom successfully and locking the door behind them, locking her in. And this is where they're like, God damn it, she's a vampire. What the hell? We were paid to kidnap a vampire. At this point, they start trying to come up with all the ideas that they know about vampires, like everything that they've learned from, like, movies and television and books and everything. And, you know, they start talking about the garlic. They start talking about daylight. They start talking about, you know, staking them in the heart, blah, blah, blah. So Frank comes up with the idea that they're going to go and try to kill her. They don't even want to fucking have to deal with a vampire for the entirety of the night. So they're just going to go kill her. Joey wants nothing to do with it, because at this point, even though Abigail has revealed herself as a vampire, Joey has had, like, the closest relationship with Abigail out of all the gang members. And even though, yes, she's a vampire, Joey still kind of feels bad for her. So she decides, I'm not gonna participate in you guys going up to attack her. So fuck it. I'm very sorry. I skipped the first death of the movie. I just realized. Dean is the first death of the movie. He ends up getting taken out in the basement. He ends up getting his head ripped off by... This is before we realize that it's Abigail. He gets his head ripped off, and this is where we hear the story of Valdez. And Valdez is basically a legendary hitman that works for Christoph Lazar. And this guy is like another legend who basically, he likes ripping people's heads off. He likes being as brutal and punishing as possible. And Valdez is the one who gets the credit for, you know, killing those three, lieutenants from Lazar's gang in the hotel room up on the 23rd floor. So literally they're all talking about this legend of Valdez, blah, blah, blah. At one point, Joey goes up to visit Abigail before she reveals herself as being a vampire. Abigail fucks with her and says, oh, that guy Frank told me that his real name is Valdez and that he works for my father. Obviously, putting that idea in Joey's head. So instantly the distrust starts and everybody, you know, who are you? Who are you? Are you Valdez? Are you Valdez? Blah, blah, blah. But then, of course, we get the reveal that Abigail is a vampire. And, of course, it is Abigail who is Valdez. Abigail is her father's assassin, which is kind of an interesting concept. We still haven't met Lazar at this point, but obviously we see paintings of him throughout the house. Like I said, we don't realize at this point that this is actually their house, which is another reveal later on, that this actually is Abigail and Christoph Lazar's house that they're actually in. But obviously at this point, the gang members know that this is a trap. They've been trapped here for some reason, and they don't know why. They're still trying to figure it out. So, at this point, it's just basically Abigail just starting to pick people off left and right. Well, maybe not left and right, but she takes out Dean. Like I said, she kills him first, and then she kills Rickles by, like, ripping part of the side of his body out. Unfortunately, we don't see it. It happens off screen, but when Joey walks up to him, we see that half of his face has been ripped off and, like, half of his torso, like, the skin, the flesh covering his torso has been ripped off. And he's just standing there with his eyes open, and then finally he falls over. So Dean and Rickles have both been dispatched at this point. Like I said, this is when Frank decides that they're going to try to attack her. They take a couple of pool cues, sharpen them into stakes. There's a funny gag where Frank sends Sammy to go get garlic out of the kitchen, and she comes back with a bag of onions, because Sammy is a young blonde girl who's very obviously not ultra bright. She's obviously a brilliant hacker, but maybe common sense isn't always there. And she even makes the comment that, I've never cooked in my fucking life. How would I know what a garlic looks like? So they do end up getting some garlic, like a package of garlic out of the kitchen. So now they are attacking. They're going up to Abigail's bedroom to attack her. Why? The attack obviously goes laughably wrong. Frank ends up getting stabbed in the thigh with one of the pool cues. I mean, right through the center of his thigh. Like, it potentially might have broken the bone. I guess it didn't, because we do see Frank walking around later in the movie. So, you know, but it just looked like it went right through his bone. It looked painful as all get out. So, obviously, during the attack, Abigail jumps on Peter. She grabs the, like, Peter is wearing a gold crucifix, and he holds it up to her like it might do anything. She looks at him, smiles, grabs the crucifix, and starts stabbing him over and over in the chest with it. Mind you, this is like maybe a 2 or 3 inch crucifix. So it's not like the stabs are actually doing a lot of damage other than generating blood, but she's just going crazy, stabbing him like a couple of dozen times with this tiny little crucifix. And then finally they're like, fuck it, let's get out of here. We can't do this. They end up leaving, locking the bedroom door once again, and just, you know, going back down the stairs with their tail between their legs. And as soon as Frank sees Joey, he's like, don't you dare say I told you so. And Joey just kind of shrugs his shoulders. But yeah, so obviously that's not going to work. Eventually, Throughout the evening, they end up coming up with a plan. They realize that the house, because the security system in the house has been activated and nothing is working, they realize that they can use the elevator as a cage. The house actually has an elevator, one of those old-timey elevators that you can actually – that's just like metal grating. You can actually see through it. You can see the floors as you're moving, blah, blah, blah. They're able to capture Abigail once again by drugging her, sedating her. And then, my friends, why they didn't just fucking kill her while she was sedated is beyond me. I will never fucking understand. The only justification I could think of is that, again, they were trying to figure out a way out of the house. And they figured she probably knows how to get out of the house. So instead of killing her, they drug her and they put her in that elevator, trapping her in there, kind of like a, you know, a jail cell. This is where we start getting more reveals of who these people are. At this point, Abigail reveals that she knows all of them, their real names and their real occupations. I'm not going to go through every single one of them, but as it turns out, they've all worked for Lazar at one point or another, maybe directly or indirectly, but they have worked for Lazar. Joey, like I said, I mentioned that when she was in the military, she was a military doctor. She was a medic. After she got out of the military, she had a drug addiction that she couldn't afford, so she became a mob doctor. She actually became a doctor for the Lazar, not the direct Lazar family, but the Lazar crime family. What ended up happening was she was in surgery removing a bullet from one of Lazar's, like, lieutenants, and apparently she was wasted. She was on drugs at that moment. And when she tried to take the bullet out, she ended up nicking an artery, and the guy ended up bleeding out and dying right there on the surgery table. She never got any repercussions for that. You know, they always chalked it up as an accident. But Abigail obviously realized that, no, it's not an accident. She it was negligence. It was, you know, her being on drugs. And then she talks about all the other people, all their connections. Frank used to be a lieutenant, a police lieutenant. And as it turns out, he's the lieutenant in the Lazar story who turned three of Lazar's lieutenants against him to turn state's evidence. And then after all three of them were just butchered that night, he quit the police force and disappeared. He figured that Lazar is probably going to be coming after him next. Or Valdez, you know, like I said, would be coming after him next because he was the one who turned those guys. And like I said, Rickles, Sammy, all of them, they all have a connection to Lazar. And they either, you know, they fucked up in some way or they tried to steal from him or whatever the case may be. So this is where, like I said, we get the reveal of everybody's connection to Lazar. And we also get the reveal that this was Abigail's plan the whole time. Lambert basically works for Abigail, and that periodically, whenever members of the Lazar family become less than useful, Lambert will set it up so that they are then – so that they kidnap Abigail, take her to the house, and then Abigail just, you know, basically feeds on all the kidnappers. And, you know, it's basically rinse and repeat. You know, I don't know how often they do it. They didn't actually mention if they do it like weekly, monthly, whatever. Maybe it's only annual. I'm not sure. But eventually we get to a scene where Sammy falls through a hole in the floor and she falls into an underground pool. There's like – it's a pool that's obviously been abandoned. Like no one uses the pool anymore. She falls into the pool and, my friends, it's the fucking pool from Poltergeist because literally there's about 50 dead bodies in this pool. The bodies have been in the pool so long that it's not even water in the pool that she's swimming in. It's like a combination of blood and like just human fat and just, it just looks fucking awful. And like I said, these bodies are all decomposing. So Abigail's obviously been doing this for a good amount of time. They just don't really tell us how long specifically. She does imply that she's been a vampire for at least a couple hundred years because at one point in the film, Joey compliments her for her acting ability, for being able to act like a little girl. And Abigail says, thank you. I've had a couple of centuries of practice. So, you know, so we find out that Abigail's at least 200 years old. So that's interesting. Now, they decide with Abigail in the cage, in the in the elevator, they decide, okay, we got to find a way out of this house. So they leave Frank to stay there to watch Abigail while the rest of the remainder of the gang that's still alive, like I said, at this point, it's Peter, Joey, Frank, and Sammy. Rickles and Dean have been dispatched. So Frank stays with Abigail while the rest of them go looking for, they're either looking for a way out or they're looking for the power supply room so that they can reboot, so that Sammy could reboot the security system and potentially open up everything and get out of there. So one of two things they're looking for. While Frank is there with Abigail, Abigail ends up telling him, listen, if you let me out of here, I will let you live. I don't need to kill all of you. And Abigail even says, you can still be helpful to our family. You know, you still have connections. You still, you know, you still have your talent. You obviously could still be of use to my father. So why don't you just let me out of here and I will let you out and that'll be the end of it. Well, obviously, Frank doesn't trust her. So Frank is like, all right, well, you're going to tell me how to get out of here first. And Abigail's like, nope, no deal. And Frank's like, well, that's the only deal I'm going to offer you. You tell me how to get out of the house first, and then I will let you out of the elevator. Well, eventually Abigail concedes, and she says, okay. She tells them, she tells Frank specifically that in the library, on the right side of the library, there is a bookcase that is a secret bookcase that covers a secret exit out of the house. And then she just says, and then there were none. And for savvy people, you realize that And Then There Were None was a very famous murder mystery book that was turned into a movie back in the 40s, I want to say. 40s or 50s, something like that. But yeah. So
45. Frank,
45, thank you. So yeah, so Frank is like, awesome, thanks for telling me how to get out of here. And he turns around and starts to leave. And Abigail's like, where are you going? We had a deal. And Frank, of course, is like, yeah, I can't believe you actually believe me, blah, blah, blah. I'll see you on the flip side, girl. And he starts to leave. And Abigail just gets so pissed off that she fucking punches the door of the elevator, tearing it down and shoving it right into Frank. She's basically pinning Frank onto the ground. At this exact moment, the other members of the group come back and they're able to kind of get Frank out of there. You know, Frank and Peter take a lot of damage in this movie. Peter gets bitten, stabbed, shot. I mean, yeah, poor guy takes a lot of damage. And Frank takes a lot of damage, too. He gets his ass whooped, stabbed with a pool cue, just all sorts of crazy shit. He falls down the stairs at one point. So, yeah, these guys are getting torn up. After getting out of there, they realize that the sun is risen and that the sun is out. Now, they were supposed to be there for 24 hours, so they're only halfway through their stint because they got there in the evening, that first evening, and then they were told you have to be here for 24 hours. So at this point, the sun is up. So they decide, let's go to a room that has a lot of windows and is bright so that we can at least protect ourselves for a few hours. Eventually, Abigail is able to catch up to them. She is able to attack them. And what ends up happening is she jumps on Frank, and she's literally about to bite Frank. But then Joey rips a couple of boards off of one of the windows. The sunlight hits Abigail's right hand, and her fucking right hand just explodes into a cloud of blood. It's pretty goddamn glorious. She starts screaming. She gets off of Frank. Instantly, I'm yelling, why are you guys not grabbing her and pulling her into the sunlight? I mean, she's a little girl and now she's injured. Yes, she's a vampire, but she's injured. She's not at full power. It shouldn't be that difficult. No, in their infinite fucking wisdom, they end up just running away. And at the moment they start to leave, they look back and they see that Abigail's hand is actually growing back instantly. It's like, you know, the bone starts protruding out of her arm. It starts to form into a hand shape, and then it cuts off before it's fully formed. But it's just to imply to us that, yeah, Abigail's still at full strength, you know. Any injuries that she gets, for the most part, are temporary. But like I said, this movie has that thing where I don't even know how to describe this, but basically there's a behavior in movies where two things can't happen at the same time. Like if someone is being attacked, even if there's other people in the room, none of them help. They all just kind of sit there and stare. Like, as Abigail is attacking Frank, literally Sammy, Peter, and Joey are all just standing there like, what do we do? You know, it's like, why is no one helping? This is a little girl. Yes, I understand she's a vampire. I understand that she's overpowered. But she's still a kid. I mean, there's got to be something. I mean, impale her from behind when she's not paying attention. Like, when she's feeding on somebody, fucking impale her while she's not paying attention.
It's actually kind of like like a positive and a negative in this movie, because I actually do prefer my vampires. Obviously, they're going to have, like, some type of advantage over, like, regular people, like, in one-on-one. So, but, like, I also like the depiction where they're stronger than us, but not by, like, such a crazy amount that like, it's not like you're watching True Blood where they're running around like the Flash,
right,
taking out like a room full of people with a fingernail. Like, I'm not so much into that. And but the downside is then you get a movie like this where, sure, Abigail, she's a vampire. If I had to take her on one-on-one, she's probably going to take me out. But it still is like a room full of people that, like you've already pointed out a few instances where, like, she's subdued or she's totally out from the drugs that she's been given. Like, you had ample opportunity to get rid of her, like, or at least try and, like, make better attempts at, like, using vampire lore that you know of to try to do stuff when she's literally unconscious. So I think that was, like, a little bit of a weak point in some of the writing.
Absolutely. 100% agree. So, yeah. All right. So at this point, during this attack where Abigail's hand gets hit by sunlight and it explodes, she actually ends up biting Sammy on the arm. Now, obviously, the traditional mythology is that if a vampire bites you, you're going to become a vampire. Well, this movie kind of follows the Interview with the Vampire formula, where it's not just a vampire bite. You then have to drink blood of the vampire that bit you. So basically what ends up happening is Sammy has been bitten, but she was not forced to drink any of Abigail's blood. So rather than her becoming a vampire, she becomes a puppet for Abigail. Abigail can actually take over, almost like possess her. To the point where when Abigail is possessing Sammy, Sammy's face looks like Abigail as far as the teeth and the clear gray eyes and the, you know, the fucked up skin. Like, she literally looks like Abigail, but it's not Sammy. It's Abigail speaking through her and acting through her. So eventually we end up having Sammy take out Peter. She ends up killing Peter in a surprise attack because, like I said, no one. And is this new for vampire lore? I don't remember. I mean, I understand that vampires have mind control, but I've never heard of a vampire biting someone and then turning them into a puppet. Like, that's, I mean, if it's been done in a movie before, I missed it. But my point is, I like it. It's new. It's different. I've never seen it before. I've never heard of it. So, you know, any attempts at originality in the vampire genre, I'll take it. So, yeah. So, like I said, Sammy ends up being a puppet. She ends up killing Peter. And then Sammy tries to attack Frank and Joey, the last members of the gang that are still alive, with Sammy, of course. And they end up walking into that same room where Abigail's hand exploded from the sunlight, and Frank and Joey literally stand in the sunlight. Sammy walks into the room. She's avoiding the sunlight, but she's in the room, and she's taunting them. She's obviously taunting them, making fun of them. I say Sammy, but it's actually Abigail in Sammy's body. Hopefully you figured that out by now. And what ends up happening is, just as Sammy is about to try to pull one or both of them out of the sunlight, Joey grabs a silver platter off the floor, like one of those serving dishes, and reflects the sun right at Sammy, and her whole fucking body explodes. It was a glorious bloody explosion, like the ones at the end of Ready or Not, when the family there started exploding individually. Yeah, it was a lot like that, which, to me, I love blood storms, so I was happy to see this much blood. So Sammy, like I said, Sammy's gone at this point. She has exploded. There is no coming back from that. Because obviously Sammy's not a vampire. She was, you know, a familiar, I guess, would be the correct term. So at this point, it's just Frank and Joey. They're in the house by themselves. Abigail's running around somewhere. They don't want to get out of this room because this is the only room that has sunlight in it, and they want to sit here. But they also understand that as soon as the sun goes down, Abigail's going to attack. So they don't know what to do. They're trying to figure out what to do. At one point, Joey tries to bash through one of the walls in that large room, unsuccessfully, of course. And then out of nowhere, a door opens, a secret door, just indiscriminately just opens, which they both think is a trap. They're like, well, that's obviously a trap. But then Frank is like, well, what else are we going to do? Just sit here and wait to be eaten? So they both decide, excuse me. They both decide to go ahead and go in the door and to go in. And when they walk through the hallway behind the door, they get to a room at the end of the hallway. And that's the security room. That's the room that they've been looking for the whole time. But inside the security room is Lambert. Now, they walk into the room and Lambert is sitting at a desk. So they're looking at him from behind. Lambert's doing something on the computer, you know, just trying to find Abigail, blah, blah, blah. And finally, the camera kind of pans off to the side, and we get the reveal that fucking Lambert is a vampire. Yes, Giancarlo Esposito as a vampire in this film. A pretty good one, too. I mean, I thought the look worked for him. I dug it. So basically what he says is, listen, Abigail turned me 2 years ago, and since then I've been basically just providing her with food and entertainment because this is like a game to her. It's the hunting game. That's what she calls it, the hunting game. So he decides, Lambert is like, I'm sick of this. And he looks at Frank and he goes, Frank, I could potentially give you all the same powers that I have, and then you and I could team up, kill Abigail, and then wait for her father to get here. And when her father gets here, we kill him and we take over the Lazar business. And Frank, obviously, as we, you know, he's a dirty cop, a detective, a failed detective who turned to a life of crime because apparently while he was undercover in the Lazar gang, he kind of developed a talent for crime. Obviously, he was undercover, but after the whole situation with the hotel room and the witnesses, he, you know, just turned into a dirty criminal just to make ends meet. Frank ends up agreeing with Lambert and saying, you know what, that sounds like a pretty damn good idea. So then we see Lambert bite Frank on the neck. Frank falls down. And then we see Lambert take a bite out of his own wrist and hold his wrist above Frank's mouth. Frank then drinks, and then we see him go through his transformation. And goddamn, this vampire transformation looks fucking painful because it almost looks like you're puking up all of your human blood. I mean, because Frank puked up blood for what felt like 45 seconds of just blood puke over and over. And that was the only thing that I could really come up with an explanation is that his human blood is being replaced by Lambert's vampire blood. So his body is expelling all of the human blood. It is just such a fucking mess. Finally, he's done puking and he looks up and he stands up and he looks and he smiles and he's got those fucking jagged ass teeth. His eyes have changed color, and you know Lambert is like excellent. You know they're ready to take over the world if they kill Abigail and Lazar. But Joey is still alive. Joey is on the ground in the room because when they first came in, Lambert kind of choked her for a little bit because he wasn't interested in her. He was interested in Frank. So as Lambert approaches Joey to then dispatch her, Frank turns on him, and he does exactly what they should have done to Abigail five different times in this movie. He impales Lambert from behind. Lambert is approaching Joey to either feed on her or kill her or whatever, and then Frank just takes one of the pool cues, stabs him in the heart, and of course we get the glorious blood explosion. I will give this movie credit for that. The fact that these vampires, when they die, they fucking explode, that is awesome. So I will definitely give them credit for that. So now at this point, we're down to Frank and Joey, and Abigail is somewhere in the house. After we dispatch Lambert, Frank decides, like, I actually thought, because Frank and Joey were starting to get more friendly as the movie went along. They obviously were at each other's throats when the whole thing started, but as the movie went along, they started to see eye to eye, and I thought they were getting friendly. So I thought Frank was either going to try to turn Joey or just flat out let her go. No, Frank turns into, like, fucking a sadistic asshole, and he starts talking about, you know what I'm going to do? I'm going to bite you. And I'm going to make you my puppet, and then I'm going to send you to go see your son, and I'm going to have you kill your own son. Which, by the way, I forgot to mention, Joey does have a kid that she had to give up because of her drug addiction and her job with the mob, her mob doctor job, so blah, blah, blah. Frank is turning into crazy sadistic motherfucker at the exact moment that he's he actually does bite Joey. He ends up biting her on the neck, and he actually does start to, like, control her. And at that moment, Abigail walks in. Abigail just nonchalantly walks into the security room, still wearing her tutu that she's been wearing the whole damn movie. And basically, you know, she's like, you know, we can't let Frank do this. Like, she probably overheard the conversation between Lambert and Frank about killing her and then turning on Lazar. So Frank and Abigail end up getting into a fight, and then Joey is helping Abigail at this point. Joey actually is trying to protect Abigail from Frank. Eventually, Frank is able to throw Joey across the room, knocking her out for a little bit. And during that moment, we see Frank bite and feed on Abigail, and he bites down on her neck, and he's feeding on her, and we see Abigail fading. Her eyes are slowly closing, and finally she's out and on the ground, and he just drops her limp body on the ground. And now we see that Frank is way more powerful. Apparently a vampire drinking vampire blood gives him some crazy abilities, because now he can't quite fly, but he could jump like three stories high up to like an upstairs staircase and shit. It's kind of interesting. They end up getting into a battle, blah, blah, blah. Like I said, Abigail is down. Joey, basically right before the fight started, Abigail told Joey to run. She's trying to get her way out of the secret, the secret entrance in the room, the one that they used to get in here, but it's been shut behind them. It's closed, so Joey literally can't get out. She ends up making a last-minute phone call to her son, who doesn't pick up the phone. The answering machine picks up, and she just basically leaves, the standard, I love you, I'm proud of you, blah, blah, blah. I've always loved you. I've always, thought that you were the greatest thing that I've ever done, blah, blah, blah. As she hangs up the phone, here comes Frank. They end up getting into a fight. Frank ends up throwing her through the door that's been locked, so now they're literally both in the main room, the sunny room, basically. Frank is obviously trying to avoid the sunlight while fighting with Joey. And then just as Frank is about to kill make her his puppet again, Abigail walks in one more time. And Abigail says to Joey, we need to stop him, and I can't do it by myself. I'm too weak. Because, he drank a shitload of her blood. And then she looks at Frank and says, hey, Frank, if you want to kill a vampire, you have to bleed him dry. You can't leave any blood in me, or I'm going to come right back. And that's what ends up happening. They get into a battle, blah, blah, blah. Joey and Abigail are able to subdue Frank. They are able to impale him, which, of course, makes him explode in a glorious explosion of blood. And now we're down to Joey and Abigail. And at this point, Abigail is thankful for Joey, actually saying, thank you for helping me, and basically agrees that she's going to let her go and that, you know, she needs to go see her son and everything else. And literally, as Joey is about to open the front door to leave, there is Christoph Lazar, my friends, played by Matthew Good. And he starts talking, because obviously, I forgot to mention that Abigail does mention that her and her father don't have the greatest relationship, to the point where she claims, my father doesn't care about me, like he used to care about me, but now he really doesn't. But he still did end up showing up here, because like I said, Lambert had called him to come over, because him and Frank, you know, so that him and Frank can attack him and kill him. But here he is in all his glory, and he starts talking about the millennia that he's been alive. And he starts talking about, I've had many different names over my time on this planet. And yes, my friends, they are implying that Christoph Lazar is fucking Dracula. And once again, I got flashbacks of The Invitation from a couple of years ago, which I fucking hated. That movie I hated from beginning to end, and then the reveal of Dracula at the end just made it worse. This one, I don't know, man. It kind of, it ends up being a hokey reveal that Abigail actually is the daughter of Dracula. Oh, and then that brings me to the original title of this movie. When this movie first went into production, its original title was Dracula's Daughter, because this was actually going to be a remake of the 1936 film Dracula's Daughter. Now, anybody familiar with Dracula's Daughter knows that this isn't a direct remake. Like, there's a lot of differences, you know, blah, blah, blah. So they definitely changed the story a little bit, but that's still what they were going for. And after the movie was over, I went online to do some research, and I found out that, yes, this is yet another attempt to reboot the Universal Monster franchise. They tried it with the Mummy, Tom Cruise's Mummy. They tried it with Dracula 2000 or 3000, whatever that stupid movie was. And even with Lee Winnell, doing The Invisible Man with those guys trying to reboot the Universal Monster franchise. So once again, here we are. And once again, this is trying to reboot the Universal Monster franchise. So, of course, Dracula is first. Well, in this case, Dracula's daughter is first. And we'll see. I mean, I haven't heard about any other plans on where this is going. But, yeah, even though they don't use the word Dracula in this movie, if you go and check out, like, interviews and other blurbs from the filmmakers, Christoph Lazar is Dracula. That is Count Dracula, the man himself who's been alive for 5,000 years plus at this point. The movie just basically ends with Joey leaving. She gets in the van that they all got there in, and she just pulls away, and that's the end of it. That, my friends, is Abigail 2024. And like I said, a fun movie up until we get to the end. Because, first of all, the final fight was a little underwhelming. I would have really liked to have seen Frank and Abigail just go crazy on each other. But obviously, because Frank is an adult vampire, he's able to easily subdue Abigail, the child vampire. So it looks like a mismatch, but obviously with Joey's help, they are able to take Frank out. So there you go.
Yeah, and I had a tough time believing that there's any way she's walking out that door alive. Like, even if Abigail wants to let her go because of some type of bond, that ain't got nothing to do with the dad. And I think he overrides and is like, fuck that. Because she just knows too much about everything now.
That's the thing, yeah. Joey now knows that vampires exist, that Dracula exists, that Dracula's daughter exists. I mean, yeah, I am shocked that they let her go. But yeah, Dracula, obviously it's more Abigail telling her father, she saved my life, you can't kill her. Like, to the point where she actually gets in her father's way when her dad is about to, like, take Joey down. So, but yeah, I totally agree with you. I don't think there's any world where Dracula would let Joey go. It just doesn't make any sense to me. But, I mean, I guess he was abiding by his daughter's wishes, which, again, doesn't make sense because it seems like Abigail was implying that he doesn't care about that Lazar doesn't care about her that much.
Yeah, that's another thing. It's like, wow, they just resolved their family issues in one half of a scene.
Exactly, a 200-year-old family issue they solved in 30 seconds.
and that's cool. Part of, like, where I was saying that, like, instead of just being the fun movie that the setup implied, it's like they tried to add a lot of extra stuff in the third act that was just, like, unnecessary, guys.
Yep.
Well, that's the other thing, because that would imply that he sired her while he was a vampire. So I don't know how that actually works. I've never heard that actually happening.
I didn't think vampires could have kids. Like, a vampire could have a kid with a human, you know, a vampire. But I've never heard a vampire, because, like, a female vampire doesn't have a working womb. Like, if human sperm were to go into a female vampire, it would just die instantly. There's no womb. There's no egg in there. It makes sense for a male vampire to be able to have a child with a female human. Vampire semen is probably super strong. But the other way around never really made sense to me. I don't know that there's really too many movies that do that anyway. Vampire mother, human father. But yeah,
Blade's the closest one, but that's only him biting the woman while she's pregnant.
Exactly. Which, you know, I accept that too. I did love Blade. So yeah. So like I said, I mean, Abigail, it's a fun movie if not slightly flawed. And like I said, it's a movie that leaves you wanting more. I wish there were more kills. I wish there were more creative kills. I actually wish we got more of Lazar. I would have actually, rather than just like 2 minutes at the end of the movie, I would have liked to have seen maybe a flashback of him doing something, you know, ages ago. Obviously, that might have given away the reveal of who he actually is. So I guess to an extent, I understand why he's not in the movie much. But he's such an imposing character. Like, Matthew Good is like a tall, thin actor who's kind of imposing. Even though he has the face of like a proper British gentleman, he's a big, imposing guy. So I thought he was a good choice for this role. I just wish they would have done more with it. That's all.
Yeah. All right. Well, that is Abigail. And that is the latest episode of Fresh Cuts. But we did record some stuff that can be talked about. So, Venom, why don't you start us off with where else we've been?
All right. The newest thing that we have is just 24 hours ago, we recorded episode 59 of the main show, No More Room in Hell. On that episode, we looked at my picks. And I'll go ahead and reveal them now, just in case. But yeah, it's the kind of thing where I just really wanted to get into some gore. You know, we've been watching a lot of PG-13 movies and R-rated movies with off-screen kills. And, you know, my heart is in gore. So I decided to bring two of the goriest movies that I could possibly think of that are still watchable, though. I explained it on the show. Like, I'm not going to bring August Underground to the show because August Underground is barely fucking watchable. I still like it because it's violent and gory as shit, but it's barely fucking watchable. So I brought two movies to the table, one an obvious choice, one maybe not so obvious. The obvious choice, of course, is 2007's Tokyo Gore Police, one of the most fun goddamn movies I've ever gotten the pleasure of talking about. And then the second movie, which might be a little bit lesser known, comes to us out of Italy in 2011, and that is Adam Chaplin. Just an amazing, unrelenting gore fest of a movie with an actual decent story too. Like I said, I wanted both movies to be something that is watchable, that actually has decent writing, decent direction, things like that. So even though Adam Chaplin is a very cheaply made movie, you can see a lot of cool filmmaking tricks in there. You know, the fight choreography is great. Obviously the gore is ridiculous. So yeah, check out episode 59 once that's available. It should be available later this week or early next week. And like I said, join us for the gory, gory fun. And let's see, what else we got? No More Room in Hell presents Creature Comforts, episode episode 25 is still the latest episode where we looked at Godzilla X Kong, doubled up on Dan Stevens' reviews there, so that's pretty fun. And then latest episode of Crystal Lake Gift Shop is still episode 4. We are in the planning stages for the next episode of the Crystal Lake Gift Shop, which will cover the Halloween episode of season 1 of Friday the 13th, the series. So look out for that. And then as far as the one guest spot that I have currently, I am on the latest episode of Cut to the Chase, where you can hear me and Dan and Lacey talk about the Omen franchise. And for a little bit of warning, this is a long episode because we're talking about all 6 films in the Omen franchise, including the latest entry, The First Omen. So look out for that on the Cut to the Chase feed. I don't know. I forgot what episode number it is, but I'm pretty sure it's their latest episode. Or if they released one this week, then obviously it's the previous one. But yeah, check that out. And that's it for me.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure it's the latest on, or it's the latest actual Cut to the Chase episode, but there might be a couple other shows that are newer on the feed. But if people just scroll to Cut to the Chase itself, it's pretty high up there still. All right, next up, Don and Ellie, what do you got?
I have, again, the latest episode of Creature Comforts. I think this is the week where we're supposed to discuss what we're talking about. I think this is, we're coming up on what we're going to be doing for next month, so should be getting news about that one out sooner rather than later, or the other way around, but you know what I mean. Latest episode, Horror Countdown is, this is the off week, so last week's episode is still out there. That is a rather random discussion I had on the director of the film Death Metal. And we discussed a little bit about the movie, a little behind-the-scenes information, and just a general conversation on heavy metal horror in general. Just at the very end, there's a top 10 countdown. So it's not a traditional episode, but that is the latest one. Look for next week to be a new release. And I think that's it. I have to check. I think I mentioned last week that my appearance on the No Bodies podcast is coming up. I think it releases next week. So I'd have to check just to make sure, but I think that's the plan. That is a general discussion on religious horror. So that one was a lot of fun. I'll, again, explain more about that when it comes out. But, I think that's pretty much it for me. I'm trying to think, and, I think that's the last one that's out. So that's all on my end.
All right. For me, I was a guest on the latest episode of the 22 Shots of Moods and Horror, discussing urban horror. We did Bones, Death by Temptation, and Snoop Dogg's Hood of Horrors. So it was a return to guest on there. It's been a while. I've actually been on a handful of their episodes, but it was kind of all bunched up at like a specific time, and then it's just time kind of flies. And we spent like, I think, the first 20 minutes of the episode like figuring out what the last episode I actually appeared on, since it's been so long. But always fun on there. In fact, sometimes the opening segment's just shooting the shit about horror and other stuff is like the funnest part. But yeah, so check that out. That's on their main feed. You can find it on YouTube or Spotify or wherever, just under the name of the podcast. And that's it for me. As far as our next episode, is there anything theatrical coming out this week?
I am not sure. I don't think so. I think we have a week off before Tarot opens on May 3rd. So I think we have 1 week. We'll have to pick a VOD.
All right. There's plenty out there. Too many to try to pick one right now. Mm-hmm. So we will gather up and figure that out sometime during this week and have it ready in about a week's time from then. So thanks, everyone, for listening. We will catch you next week with another episode of Fresh Cuts. Let's say bye to our listeners.
Later.
Please, 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 no more modern-day Dracula movies. If you're going to make a fucking Dracula movie, make it a period piece. Every modern-day Dracula movie sucks balls. So, yeah, please, do me the favor.
I have nothing to follow that up with.
Because even that Netflix Dracula miniseries that they did, where it started in the period, like the Dracula period, but then the second half of it was modern day, mm-hmm. The second half of it sucked. Like, watching Dracula try to traverse apartment living, like, that's not interesting. Damn it.
Yeah. I feel like a lot of modern depictions of Dracula, where they try to take the character of not just a vampire, but Dracula himself and put it in modern times, he just comes off as, like, your typical, like, douche anyway. There's no defining characteristics, you know?
Yeah, I always think about, like, the Blade 3 Dracula that was one of the worst cinematic Draculas ever. What was it? What's the movie I'm thinking of? Van Helsing. Yeah, that Dracula mm-hmm. was kind of shitty, too. Not that that was modern day. That was still a period piece, but that movie had a lot more troubles than that. But, yeah, Dracula just – it's hard to put him in a modern setting. Like even the Anne Rice things, like, once we – like, all the stuff in from the past is interesting, and once we get to modern times, it's like, less interesting. I don't know. It's weird.
Yeah.
Oh, hopefully someone will do a good one someday.
And then we can cover it on Fresh Cuts and be happy with it.